A lot of veterans know what it's like to keep moving because slowing down means dealing with everything that you've been trying to outrun. The PTSD can make it hard to focus, hard to relax, hard to figure out what to do with all the anger, the stress, and memories that still come at you even years later. This episode is going to get into one way to deal with all of that in a practical way. Our guest today, Ken Webb, talks about why he stopped waiting for the next thing to come around. He moved to Peru and put his time into writing a novel that helped him work through betrayal, fear, and old combat stress. In this episode, you'll hear how he gave himself structure again, why reading and writing helped him stay focused, and why creating something with your own hands can give you a sense of purpose when you need one. But before we get into this episode, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that's deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians who are impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. This memorial will be both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you'd like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now, let's get into today's episode. Hey, Ken, welcome to the show. Really glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Hey, before we kind of jump into the conversation, would you mind telling us a little bit about your background and a little bit about yourself, just for the listeners maybe who aren't familiar with you and who you are?
Yes, I'm from a town called Collingdale, Pennsylvania, right outside Philadelphia. Grew up in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and then also in Texas. Graduated from the University of Texas in Arlington, not the main campus, the big hordes, but I was an ROTC graduate. Prior to that, I was enlisted, always in the Army Reserves, 33 years, most of it as an officer. I was in armor, enlisted, and then as an officer of military police. I had a hard time, but I did branch transfer to military intelligence. I have some combat deployments in Kosovo, Iraq, and then Afghanistan, and then back to Iraq at the embassy in Baghdad, Iraq. Under the State Department, even though I was Army on a diplomatic mission, couldn't carry a firearm. Yeah. So I'm retired from the Army Reserves. I'm also retired from American Airlines. And I did about 7 months as a Department of Defense contractor in Kuwait, doing some intelligence. I'm living down in the Miraflores district of Lima, Peru. It's on the coast, picture California, Santa Barbara, someplace like that. Also had the earthquake. But right now, it's nice and warm here, and I know it's cold up there.
Yeah.
You suck. I don't want to hear that.
Yeah. The time we're recording, just for the listeners here, this is the end of January. This is around the time period when everyone is getting snowed in and everything around the country. I'm in Arizona right now, so it's nice and sunny and warm here. So
but it could be icy there, though, but maybe not.
Certain places, but I'm down in the Phoenix area. It's nice and warm here, so I don't really have to worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, my friend earlier today said he was showing me the weather report there. He said, "Yeah, I know you're down in Miraflores near Peru." He said, "FU," but he didn't say F. He wrote, he said, I don't want to hear it. Don't tell me how wonderful it is. I don't want to know."
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm down here now and it's I have some PTSD, but I came down here and I was waiting on another contracting job. And when the time came up, I was like, "Look, I waited 3 months on you guys. And you want me to go back to the United States to go work in over Australia, Ayers Rock area. And, I'm going to be working in a building with the windows, 12-hour shifts, and then go 12 to midnight, 12 to midnight, midnight to 12, midnight to 12, and then 4 days off. And in really hot environment, I've researched this. And, at that time, I was already in my 50s, mid-50s, and I knew people were dying from heart attacks, some from cancer, and I was like, I'm going to live my life.
Yeah.
So I'm going to study Spanish. I'm going to continue studying it down here. I want to get fluent. So I'm building my resume. I want to write that novel I've always wanted to write, and I'd already started writing it. And then, you know, I want to get my doctorate. And then at my age, now February, I'll be 57. I was thinking I was going to go to Texas A&M University, and really thinking it over, I don't want to look for a parking space. I'm not going to go to football games. I don't want to let your 20 and, you know, young 30-year-olds, 32-year-olds say, what's grandpa doing in our class? So right. I'm just going to do it online, continue to study Spanish. And I do have PTSD. I'm 100% by the VA, and 50% of that is PTSD. And this is good for me down here. Just that it's more, it could be frustrating. If I was working here, I don't think this would be good for my PTSD. Mm-hmm. Because the traffic is atrocious. And the way that they view time is different here.
Sure.
You know, it's just kind of like, you know, 8 o'clock, well, you show up maybe 8:20, 8:30.
Yeah.
I don't know that they're necessarily that way when they work, but you know, at a social event, you can't show up before the event. You know, me, I'm showing up 10 minutes early. So now I've learned to just wait until it's actual time for the event and then ring the doorbell.
Yeah.
But and really it's less stressful for me because my US dollar goes further.
Sure.
But where you will see my stress PTSD coming out is when the people lay on their horns. And I say, what the heck is wrong with you? The light's red. What are you accomplishing? Why are you honking?
Right.
And so I'm enjoying it here. I pride myself in being able to express myself well in English.
Mm-hmm.
And when I can't do that in Spanish, which I obviously can't, it's frustrating to me. I'm alone down here. I don't have a very big family in the United States, so there's almost none of us left. And so I know it's survival. You know, I made connections down here with the expat community, make sure people know me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it seems like, you know, so you found a place that kind of works for you for, you know, the kind of stage of life that you're in, you know, the lifestyle that you're trying to live and everything. And it's, you know, a nice place. It's, you know, you feel safe and comfortable there. You know, obviously the language is an issue, but that's something that you're working on. And I think the language side of things, as you were talking, it kind of gave me the idea that you're probably distracting yourself enough as you're learning the new language that, you know, all that other noise that maybe might be going on in your head might be enough to kind of distract you from that.
It is great. I mean, I was raised, you know, kind of an interesting childhood. Mother married 5 times and had some really good grandparents. Her grandparents were really good and very integral in my life. As a matter of fact, my book is dedicated to my grandmother. They had told her, you know, we're sorry, your grandson is mildly retarded and he'll never learn how to read. And she knew that that wasn't true. Now, she said, well, my retarded grandson could do multiplication tables in his head when he was 5 years.
Right.
And the point to make sure that she taught me to read.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, thanks to her, now I've read hundreds of books. I don't even know how many.
Sure.
But I love to read. I love to write. So yeah, it's good, but I was raised by them because they grew up during the Depression. They never had money that a man works. And so here I have retired at 53 unintentionally from 2 jobs, Army and American Airlines. And, you know, I'm like, well, a man can work, but it's not necessarily that the man is earning money. So I treated my book like a job.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think I'll ever get the money back that I spend on the book.
Sure.
But that's okay. And, you know, a doctorate, master's degree, anything, that could be work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, helping to raise your grandkids or something. I don't have any children, but helping to raise your grandkids, that is work.
Yep.
Legitimate work. I volunteer at the church I go to. Mm-hmm. I get up, the guy that gets up to make sure that they have pots of coffee in the morning, big things of coffee, gets all the cake, cuts it up, sets everything up. And I clean it up afterwards and I wash the dishes. So, you know, I'm keeping myself busy. So you're absolutely right. The idea is to keep yourself busy. Now, it could be bad when you use it as a form of procrastination. I don't want to deal with the problem, so I'm going to make up all these other things that I need to do before this can happen.
Sure.
But when you use it as something more like, Because I'm a Christian, and I was thinking, you know, I'm allowing myself to get depressed, you know, about something, a relationship. I had a relationship with a girl here, and I was like, that's not what God wants for me. He doesn't want me to be miserable. Mm-hmm. So I'm using this time, and it's like paralysis I was an analyst in the Army, paralysis by analysis, you know, and get yourself in a loop. And it's really counterproductive. It's very unhealthy because it's not one you can get out of. You can't change the past. So these people who have PTSD and things, something that happened to them before, the horrible thing is they can never go back and like Doctor Who in a time machine and just change it. It's going to always have the same ending, but you need to change your future ending. And I like to be able to finish every day. And if nothing else, I'm going to read. I'm going to read. And I read the same type of novels I write. I wrote a novel that was fiction, or novelist fiction, but a crime drama, action thriller. Everybody in the novel was based on somebody I personally know.
Okay.
So everybody who speaks in the novel is based on somebody I know. There's some characters, some guy walking on the street. I don't worry about that. Mm-hmm. But person speaks. It's based, and in a very few cases, I took several people and incorporated in the person. But for most of them, like if these people were to read the novel, they'd be, hey, that's me. You know, and I might make them a bad person or something like that. And that's not like them necessarily, but sure. With their attributes, the things they do, some of their quirks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just to keep yourself busy, to do things productive. I looked at percentages, how many people write a novel, you know, how many people say they're going to write a novel? Well, a lot of people say that. How many people get to the first draft?
Yeah, very small.
And then how many to publish?
Even smaller.
Well, I have it on Amazon, and I did the audiobook. I did it myself, paid a sound engineer, because I've been told I have a good speaking voice. They like to have me speak in church. So I did it on the novel, too. And I did it less than a week. So, oh,
wow. Well, and so when you were writing the novel, and I know going back to what you were saying before about, you know, work, and there's a lot of different types of work. And this is obviously, writing a book of any type is work. I know, having done it myself, it's a lot of work to do.
If you do it right, it's not easy.
No, exactly.
I've been told the second one, you want to work just as hard on it, but it's better. Mm-hmm. So to get to the stage that you were at previously is not as hard. And each time you should get better.
So how did you find that writing process for you as far as the PTSD side of things goes? Did that help you kind of like dive into something and keep you focused on that? Or was it kind of cathartic in a way? Or how did that help you?
It was more cathartic. I mean, friend, who's the bad guy in the book, who betrayed me. And I took, you know, with some good people, I exaggerated their good qualities. With him, I exaggerated his bad qualities, made him worse than he actually was. But he really hurt me, really betrayed me. And that was catharsis.
Mm-hmm.
And the good person in the book is loosely based on me. He happened to be in Kosovo, Iraq, and Afghanistan the exact same time as me. The exact same rank, same birthday as me, mother who lives in the same town, dog with the same name, a Kona Blue Ford Mustang 2012 5.0, just like I had, manual, likes to play chess, all the quirks I have. The only one difference is he's a computer genius, which I'm not. But the same type of firearm, the Browning High Power that I like, the pistol I like, you know, and it was cathartic because it was like I was fixing this problem somehow and growing through it. And, you know, you look at, as I said, I love to read. And I used to like to read the shoot 'em up, bang 'em up thing, you know, the James Bond thing, Ian Fleming. Now I like psychological thrillers more. Okay. And not even something as much as Tom Clancy, because that's a lot of action, or James Patterson, more like the Johnny Le Carre. And he's more talking about, I mean, he doesn't, certainly doesn't paint the East very well, but the West, he's critical of the West as well. He's critical, you know, he's skeptical of human nature. It's kind of an investigation. And the hero in the novel, I won't give it away too much, but he's not entirely innocent. He's got some skeletons in his closet he's running from. And I think that's reality. When you look at these people, I mean, you look at military or anything, you're going to pull up some of these Medal of Honor winners, things like that. They're not going to be, you know, as pure as a piece of paper. They're going to have some enemies in there.
Yeah.
Maybe they're alcoholics. Maybe they left their wife, abandoned their kids. I mean, we don't know. We don't know why they did it. We don't know why they became alcoholic, you know. So.
Yep. Yeah. And And I think, you know, that goes for anybody really, is that, you know, you can have somebody who had an incredible day, you know, where they do some incredible heroics and they win that, or, you know, get that Medal of Honor, you know, bestowed upon them because they did something, you know, wonderful and great and all this stuff. Right. But you're right. They could also have other bad days in their life. Not to say that whatever they did that day, that was a good day, because it probably required a lot of sacrifice, and it was probably a very bad day in their minds anyways. But you know, the way we look at it is it's, oh my God, that day made that person a hero. But you know, other days you might look at the person and say, oh man, that's probably not so great. But I think that's with everybody. You know, we all have our good days, we all have our bad days. And you know, I bring that up because you mentioned the PTSD on your end and the stuff that you've gone through. I'm sure you've had good days and bad days too, as far as dealing with that in and of itself. And so, you know, the whole writing process, being able to dive into it, like you said, and even work through some problems or solve problems, even though it's a fictional story that you're writing, still probably can help you wrap your head around certain things that you've been dealing with too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And really there's a, you know, I used to think, well, audiobooks, you know, that's great. You know, you can be doing something else while you're doing it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the point. How do you do something else while you're reading? When you read, you do focus, and it's the same way when you write. And to me, I found I wrote the best. I got down to the basics. I mean, I know you were in the Army, infantry. Sometimes you have to get back to just basic rifle marksmanship.
That's right.
And it may not be some highly complicated computer. It might not be some equation. You might be taking dimes and putting them on the end of a rifle. And for people who have been in the Army maybe 20 years, because they need to get back to the basics, they picked up some bad habits. Mm-hmm. And so I took a pen, a normal pen, and just normal paper, and instead of using the computer, the laptop, and instead of using any, you know, we say, why don't use AI? Yeah, well, Microsoft Word even has AI now that tries to correct what even suggests them.
Right.
To do it, but it's suggesting stuff. So to get completely divorced, to just completely divorce myself from that, just a pen and paper and writing like that. That's how I wrote the first draft. Not worrying too much about spelling and grammar, knowing that Microsoft Word can correct all that.
Yeah.
And I had to concentrate, and I was studying in a Spanish school, El Sol, which means the sun. I had an Airbnb. I lived right next door. It was great, except I really didn't have a view, but it was okay for that year I was there. Mm-hmm. And then I had to go back. My mother got sick. I went back and I was back for months. And then I returned my retirement visa. But I would go to a coffee shop. I'd get a nice Peruvian cigar and coffee, never alcohol, and bring a bottle of water with me and just write and write and write. And eventually I would transfer to the laptop, and then so on and so forth. I spent a lot of money getting paid beta readers. I got developmental editing, line by line editing, proofreading. I paid a formatter. I don't want to be associated with AI, so I paid someone off Fiverr to do my front and rear cover.
Okay.
As you know, if you published on Amazon, if your front or rear cover or anything in that novel was done by AI, as far as the photos, as far as the illustrations, then you have to say it is AI. Now, you can use AI for some things and get away with it. I used AI for my list of characters. I typed in all the characters and I said, now order this in the way, alphabetize and everything. You could do that. Or acronym, yen. Create me a table of contents. Here's everything. Give the proper spacing. And then you confirm it. You can do that.
Sure.
But I mean, for the writing and stuff, you have to be real careful with these suggestions that they give. And ultimately, it's not better. When they give the suggestions, it takes out the human element. And it's very, very, I don't know how to say, mechanical, Dr. Spock-like. I mean, just
very robotic, I think.
It takes out the human element altogether.
Yeah.
Unless there's no place for it. I mean, I entered in chapter by chapter and I said, what grade level is this written?
Yeah.
It was written at consistently an eighth grade level.
Sure.
Which should be a comfortable reading level for someone, a high school graduate or someone in university, you know, someone who, you know, it, people like to read at a lower level than what they're capable of. You know, I don't want to read something that's, I can just barely make out what it is. I have to strain.
Right. When you're really struggling to follow along, it just doesn't become an enjoyable read. So that's about the grade level that you want to shoot for when you're writing something like that.
I have a theory, like they say, adults, you know, you can't learn. I don't think that's it. I think we can learn. I just think that learning is work.
Yeah.
I remember learning to read, learning math, learning all these things was work. And people want to just be in their comfort level.
Yeah.
So I think you can do it. I think, and you know, anybody listening, you know, if you want to become an author later in life, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I waited till I had a pension. I waited till I had a pension. And then it's like, yeah, it didn't make a lot of money. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think that's something that I wanted to get across too with the listeners is that, you know, I think everybody at some point or another is going to have a story to tell, whether it's their own personal story or they've, you know, created a story, a fictional story in their head, and they have stuff that they want to get out there. These days, it's easier than ever to be able to write a book. You know, like you mentioned Amazon publishing, it's a lot easier than it was, you know, 20, 30 plus years ago when you had to go to a publisher and get
a publisher. Now you can publish yourself. So you're publishing yourself. You could literally publish post-it notes.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you wanted to.
Yep.
So writing a novel, some people might be out there saying, well, it's not hard to write a novel at all. Well, I guess my question to them would be, what quality is the novel you've written?
Sure. Yeah.
Because if your novel flows, if it has a true beginning and an end, if it keeps people's attention, if it's consistent, if you have a table of contents, if you have a list of characters, I even put footnotes in my novel. If you have acronyms, if the dates are correct, my novel took place 2014 and 2015.
Sure.
And it has flashbacks to Afghanistan, which I was there 2009 and 10. We lost a soldier in the Tangi Valley. And there is a fight that happens in the Tangi Valley. But that wasn't, the same soldier wasn't lost and all that. But, you know, things might be familiar with.
Well, you know, even that you just mentioned, I'm sure that was beneficial to you in some way to kind of go back and kind of process through some of those thoughts and those memories that you had from that incident, even though it's not exactly what had been written about in your book, but you probably still went back and relived a little bit of that, right?
I did go back and relive some of it, the stress we were under.
Yeah.
Honestly, I remember going to Iraq in 2003, you know, with the war, you know, getting ready to kick off. And I was scared. We were going into month level 4, you know, for chemical. And we thought Saddam was going to use nerve gas on us and Patriot stopped hitting things out and going into month 4, getting out, mm-hmm. on out. And it was very stressful. And I remember being scared, very, very afraid. I mean, people say, oh, no, I wasn't for a while. I was. I can always speak for myself that when they showed us what they did to a mouse, we drop a little bit of nerve agent in there and they're saying this could get on us. Yeah, I was scared.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't anxious. I wasn't, you know, just hesitant, but afraid. I was scared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a normal reaction too. And other people, they may not have the same reaction. They might have the same reaction, but not say that they did. And so, you know, there's all sorts of different ways that people handle it, but you know, having those reactions, perfectly normal, perfectly natural. There's, you know, nothing wrong with it, but I think it's a matter of, you know, what you do with that and, you know, how you move through. You know, do you freeze and not do anything, or do you kind of push through and figure your way through it? And, you know, there's a lot of different ways that people handle things, but, you know, it's really just a matter of your own mindset and how you're able to handle that. And then how you handle it after the fact too, because, you know, it's one thing living in the moment. You can't really change it. You can't take the missiles out of the sky. You can't take the, you know, whatever is going on. But then afterwards, you live through something that's relatively traumatic. how do you deal with that? And how do you move forward from that? And that's, you know, a hard thing for a lot of people to be able to do that. But, you know, we've talked about the book a little bit, you know, just kind of in high level detail, not, you know, kind of like some of the characters, who they're based on and that type of thing. But I also want to give you a chance to tell folks what the book's about and what they can, where obviously you said you can get it on Amazon. Well, I want to give you that chance to talk a little bit about the book too, because I'm sure there might be some readers out there who are, you know, interested in a crime drama type novel, and they want to know a little bit more about it too. You mind giving us just a little bit of a rundown on what the book's all about?
Absolutely. Here it is, Trapped in Deception. It's by me, Ken Webb, with two B's, and it is a crime drama taking place 2014-2015. Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, Miraflores, Lima, Peru, where I'm at now, and Huancayo, Peru. And if any listener has not heard of that, don't be surprised and don't feel bad, because that is not even a touristy place for anybody except for other Peruvians. You don't even meet, I didn't meet people there from Chile. I didn't meet people there from Argentina, just Peru. People were staring at me. I was the only gringo around for 4 days. And the way the crime happens, this person is the chief financial officer, robs a bank, but not with a pistol. He steals funds, sends them to the Caribbean and other places, also steals a cryptocurrency key. So a lot in writing a novel is doing research. And research, I didn't know about crypto. I still don't know as much about cryptocurrency as a lot of people, but I figured out enough to write the novel on it.
Sure.
Don't trust cryptocurrency. You don't want to use it, but he stole it. And then he does a familiar thing. He fakes his own death, comes down to Miraflores. You know, he's a person, one of those people who can never get enough. And even though he stole millions of dollars, he's going to plan a gold robbery on Cajamarca, which is the gold mine down here, which I believe was more active back in 2014 and 15. Maybe not as much now. But he goes to the church. He's pretending to be a missionary there with the church. He rents the church, and he can't get into the cryptocurrency key. And the bank that he stole the money from, the CEO of the bank, was using that money to gamble illegally. And so they don't want to go to the police. The CEO says, no, we can't go to the police, and this is why. So they go to the head of security, has a nephew who works for an organization called Silent Wolf, which is basically like a Blackwater Triple Canopy type organization with a lot of former special operators who work for them. And even this, they know they're going to do it off the books with his nephew's going to do it with another person, but they don't really have an in. They don't know where the bad guy, whose name Sean Larson, really is. But Sean Larson reaches out to his former friend, Eddie Lutt, based on me, minus the computer expertise. Remember this friend who had betrayed me? And he's like, hey, I'll give you an all-expense pay trip to Peru, you know, and, you know, pay you very well. And Eddie turns him down. But he had been in Afghanistan, worked a little bit with special forces. He told his friend about this. His friend had some friends with Tampa. In Tampa, and as you know, that's where SOCOM is at. And so then they're like, they find out what's going on, or they encourage him to go ahead and take the mission, and they're going to pay him. So he starts working for Silent Wolf and on a contract basis, just a one-time thing. Quits his job with the airlines, but he has to get trained up. And he by the way, he shot a very important person with the Taliban over in Afghanistan, Eddie Lutt did. However, it was a negligent discharge. He should have been reprimanded for it, but it was a negligent discharge. So he got a Bronze Star for it. So he's faking it. He's faking it. So he's not innocent in all this. And so he goes down, and it's all about the struggles he goes through. And then I put plus in there, like I put things in there that will allow me to write other things in the series.
Sure.
And then drug and bothers other computer experts. And it's all about a coming, I don't want to say coming of age, but like it's different. The reason I say John le Carré, his heroes sometimes are not in their 20s or 30s. And in this case, the hero of the book is 46, the other guy is 47. Not unheard of, but a little out of the ordinary. They want a young, good-looking guy, and 80 is neither one. And the bad guy is a lot better looking. Good talker, just like my friend.
Sure.
Able to charm people, able to trick people. And the person I know, my former friend, he was like that. You are not in Texas, are you?
No.
Okay. He used to dress up. He lived in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He would dress up, drive down to Austin. He was doing wedding crashing, funeral crashing, to meet people, eat food, drink alcohol. Lived in Minden, Nevada. Got a cell phone number from San Francisco, would drive there on the weekend, set up a date with a dating site, rent a room, had the women thinking he lived there, you know, just a real con artist.
Sure.
Yeah, a true con artist. So that the novel is about the frustration, maybe not PTSD, but about dealing with some of the psychological frustrations of a gaslighter, someone who is not a pathological liar, because pathological liars have to lie. And he doesn't have to lie, but he lies. He doesn't mind lying, but he lies when it suits him, whenever it will further his own ends.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So, okay. So for the listeners, you know, got a little bit of a rundown of the book, and, you know, especially if you're, you know, dealing with somebody in your life who's in that gaslighting phase, or, you know, constant lying and things like that, that might be something interesting to you to kind of get some perspective on how that was handled. But, you know, so it's, you know, thanks for, you know, giving us a little background on the book. For any of the listeners maybe who are considering writing a story, whether it's a novel or their own personal stories or anything like that, and do you have any advice for anyone who's considering jumping into that?
Yes, I would say start writing. Don't worry about throwing it out saying this is no good. No, I changed my mind. I would say just do it. Just, you know, just get in there, do it. Just like that commercial, just do it. You know, get in there, start writing, figure out what you want to write about. You know, I wrote because it was catharsis. I wanted to get it out.
Sure.
I had a story to tell. And now that the story's been told, I mean, the follow-on books will be easier and harder. They'll be easier because now I know the process for writing, but I've told my story in this book, and now it will just be building on what was told in there, but it will no longer be as much from my personal experiences, because I mean, we're talking about, there are texts in the novel and emails in the novel that were real. And I just changed the names, changed the dates. They were real texts, real emails.
You know? Okay. Yeah.
So, I would say just draw from what you want to write about and do it. I'm a member of a writer's group here, and people are like, well, I'm not a writer, but I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, if you write, you're a writer. You're saying you're not as good as you want to be. That's right. What you're saying.
Yeah.
You say, I want to be a hunter. Well, you go hunting the first time, you're a hunter.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. You may not be the best hunter, you know, first time you go out. Probably you're not going to be the best hunter the first time you go out. And that's the same with pretty much anything that you do. You're not going to be the best the very first time you try it. It requires the repetitions to the practice, and you have to go through the motions to get yourself better. And the more you do it, the better you'll get. And it's just part of the process. That's life. I mean, I hate to break it to you, but it doesn't come easy all the time. You know, you gotta do those kind of things. So that's a good point though. You know, if you got something, just start. You know, the best day to start was yesterday. The second best day is today. So, you know, just get in there and get started, and, you know, write something, anything, and see how that is helpful for you. Maybe it will be, maybe it won't be. And, you know, maybe getting your story out there isn't exactly what you're trying to do, but maybe writing it down, just the action of writing it down, you could burn it afterwards, yeah. But just the action.
And you
can
build on it, build your confidence. Now I've written
an
article for a military magazine, an Army Reserve unit I used to be in, the 75th Training Command.
Okay.
And, you know, they're not going to pay me anything, but I can still say I'm published.
Sure.
You know, I did that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm willing to write more articles for them, and I'm going to write that second novel in the series, the third novel, and, you You know, I don't know if it'll be a 3-novel series or a 4-novel series. I mean, excuse me, or a 5-novel. I don't think it'll be 4, but certainly like 3 or 5. I don't think they normally have 4 of the way they work.
Okay.
And after that, I think I'm done writing the novels.
Okay.
I'll go on to something else.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing too, is you, just because you do that, you don't have to be forced into that, and that's all you can do. You know, you can have other interests as well. Maybe you want to learn how to play the guitar, or you know, something. You know, you can find other things that you can do that are similar types of work, or something completely different, and you can do those things until they no longer suit you, and you can continue evolving and moving on from that. And I think that's kind of the, you know, one of the takeaways for the listeners here is, you know, you don't need to just be stuck on one thing. You can try lots of different things, and, you know, some are going to be more effective for you than others. And some are not going to be helpful for you at all. And you might say, you know what, I tried this and I hate it. It sucks. And let's move on to the next thing. I guess the point is just keep trying and see where it takes you. So, Yeah. So great advice. You know, thanks for, again, sharing your story and the, you know, a little bit about your background and the writing process yourself. Anything else you want to add before we kind of wrap up here?
I guess the only thing on my novel, if they do like the novel, please consider giving it a review on Amazon. Sure. And Goodreads.
Yeah.
I can't solicit that on Amazon, but I can solicit it on this. So please give the reviews. I don't know if it helps sell it, but it makes me think, yeah, this was worthwhile.
Right.
I currently earned 8 5-star reviews on Amazon in the United States Amazon, and 2 on the United Kingdom Amazon. 1 from a person who listened to my audiobook.
Okay.
And then I have 4 5-star reviews on Goodreads. So.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
4 5-star reviews, yeah.
Yeah, definitely write reviews, you know, and get them out there, because it gives the other customers who might be interested in buying the book,
yeah,
just an idea of what somebody else thinks of it. And sometimes that is even better than whatever description you might put out there on the book. Because
oh, yeah, I won't read a book from it. If it was John le Carré or Jack Higgins, I'll read a novel before it has any reviews. But from an unknown author, I'm not going to take a chance on somebody who doesn't have at least 5 5-star reviews.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, and the more, the better. And the more you can have there, and the way Amazon does it now, it gives you a nice summary of all the reviews and everything, what people think. It's really kind of neat how they do integrate AI into their platform there and summarize everything for you. So you don't have to go read through, you know, 500 reviews if that's what the product has, or the book or whatever. So, but it's really cool. And Ken, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story and sharing, you know, about your book and the whole process and how it's been kind of beneficial for you, even, you know, outside of the country as an expat. You know, it's kind of interesting hearing folks and their perspectives. So thanks again.
Okay.